Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and with me this afternoon is my co-host, as always,
Chad Mitz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. So, Chad, Avengers, Infinity War, small film, people putting out, looking at every single frame of every single TV spot to try and see if there's new footage. Marvel trolling everybody by putting out thank you fans trailers and other behind the scenes stuff that might or might not reveal actual footage from the film. All people trying to guess and figure out and contort what the plot of this movie will be and what secrets it holds. And we got word today that anticipation is in an all-time high as Fandango released some propaganda from Marvel to continue to publicize their reign across the universe. What are your thoughts, sir, on Infinity War tracking to open over $200 million as a conservative estimate by the fine folks of Bonavista Entertainment, and Fandango saying that they have sold more tickets for this movie than the previous seven Marvel movies combined?
So to the first point, movie studios, when it comes to releasing early estimates, particularly this far out, they tend to side on the conservative end. So if Disney is out there saying we're tracking for $200 million, that means they're probably really tracking at about $220 million, but they want to temper expectation. So if the studio on a conservative side is saying $200 million, I mean, that's like that's basically money in the bank. That's locked up. They're getting $200 million off top. So at that point, it's just like, how much more is this movie really going to make opening weekend? That we have time to talk about that, but it just tells me that Disney knows they're about to make a whole lot of money on the front end of this movie, and everything else depends on how much people like it, which if it's par for the course, they'll like it enough to give it a lot of money. Now on to the Fandango and the pre-sale numbers. I know people like to look at those and they get excited, and this one is saying it's the pre-sale numbers are larger than all of the Marvel openings and like the last seven Marvel movies combined. And then once you factor that in and also consider that
it's tracking ahead of Black Panther,
which was the largest pre-sale Marvel done at the time. All of that sounds really good, but I don't like looking at pre-sale numbers because it's a fairly new thing. So how many movies are we really talking about altogether with pre-sales? Two, it's not... Once tickets go on pre-sale, you can kind of get them for whenever you want, not just the opening night and that kind of stuff. So it's spread out. So it doesn't necessarily mean this is going to affect opening weekend or the opening day numbers. So it's a whole bunch of different things. Just because it's fairly new, it's not, I don't think it's all that accurate. I would go off of what the reported tracking numbers are before I look at that. I think it's mostly, you called it propaganda, and it's kind of true. It's a way to get the fans like, oh, everybody's really trying to go see this. It's really going to be good. Let me make sure I got my tickets and that kind of stuff now.
Having looked at our seating chart for our 7 o'clock IMAX screening, I can tell you that the sides are pretty much still empty.
Yeah. But I looked at it yesterday, too, and what I call the body of that theater is just the big middle part that most people sit in. There are only two available seats, one on the end and one in the front. But everything else in that body is full. So I don't think it'll completely fill up, but I would imagine the sides would be almost full. The bottom, probably not.
Who wants to look up at a giant screen and look at Thanos?
Star Wars nerds, because they do it every time.
Have to.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, look, I'm excited. Everybody should be excited. Pepper Potts is returning to the MCU.
Here we go.
It's going to be a glorious thing. But, like, I don't see this as being, like, a shock to anybody. Like, the question is, if you have a range between 180 and 220 million, which is what Last Jedi did, you have a range between those two numbers, is it going to fall somewhere in the middle or is it going to fall above? And the only way I can see it soaring above is if you get strong word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
They're hedging their bet by moving up, I think, was their wisest move. You're going to bank 200, 210, 215, 220, you know, from domestic. You're going to add more to that overseas. It opens day and date everywhere. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have a huge opening weekend. If that film gets good word of mouth coming out of that that premiere, which I'm assuming they'll embargo the reviews until the day of.
That's what it was looking like, yeah.
I mean, if word of mouth is good on the reviews, and then people go and see the movie, and people are having a conversation about the movie. I mean, look, we're right here in the middle of A Quiet Place, like, doing $50 million at the box office. A film that was on no one's radar 2 weeks ago, but because it got strong reviews coming out of South by Southwest, and because people saw it and people started talking about it the same way as Split, it became a conversation piece, Get Out the same way. People started talking about the movie and talking about the twists and turns, and it made people want to go out to the movies and see it. I think the same thing's going to happen here. I think that if this movie is good and the plot twists are appropriate, I think it's going to start a conversation, not just among nerds, but among casual moviegoers who have been following this universe for 10 years now and who care about these characters a lot. And I think it will, you know, lead to strong Saturday and Sunday numbers, because that's really what you're talking about here, your Saturday and Sunday numbers. Because your Friday, Thursday night previews and your Friday night and your Friday numbers are going to be big. It's really about your Saturday and Sunday numbers, and those are where you get your repeat viewers.
Yeah. So I know I don't think this next part is what's going to affect like general audiences, but for most movie nerds, particularly in the last couple of years, when movies are embargoed up until the day of, generally that means bad news. They're probably going to suck. So if anybody's looking at that, it's like, oh, they're not doing them reviews until like the day of or the day before. It's not because they're afraid of it. It's because they're treating it like Star Wars.
It's the same reason they moved up the release date. Part of it was that they wanted to give Solo some breathing room and didn't want to have to compete directly with Deadpool 2 so soon and all this. Another part of it too was, we already have this movie dated to come out on the 27th overseas. If we let it come out overseas on the 27th and hold it in the States for a week, every twist and turn of our movie is going to be spoiled on the internet.
Yep.
Within the first 12 hours. So instead of doing that and having us, you know, have to go through that, let's just release a day and date across the world, and let's hold reviewers, you know, hold reviews until like the day of, so that spoilers don't get out there in reviews.
Yeah, because I think they'll still, I don't think they're doing the advance previews like
they did with Black Panther. No, they're not doing advanced screenings at all. They're just doing the premiere and whatever media. I'm sure Jim will get invited to the premiere in LA, whatever.
Is that the week of or is the week before?
It's 3 days before. 3 or 4 days before.
Okay. So yeah, we won't hear anything about this movie until...
I would be willing to bet you're allowed to tweet your reactions after the premiere. Because they do that with Star Wars too.
Yeah.
And then you'll wait for their actual
review.
Review.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that's where we're headed with this one. And this movie, much like all the Avengers movies have become, and like Black Panther became, it's an event. It's not just the movie. Like most of the Marvel movies, people like, they go, they make a lot of money, but
except Thor the Dark World.
Except, I mean, it still made money. May not mean as much, but it made money. But this thing is an event, just like Star Wars has become an event. So with the event movies, it's just the nature of how everything works around them. People are just gonna go see them. So as long as this movie's good, it's going to go right there to $1 billion like the other two Avengers movies. If it's really good, who knows? I don't think it'll get... because the summer's so weird now with how the money comes in, I don't think it'll get past... It'll get in the top five probably. So it's that's just we're just waiting to see how that all turns out. We'll find out more when we see the movie.
And also, it does help for them that they shot the whole thing on IMAX cameras, and they're really pushing the IMAX version of this film. And IMAX tickets are more expensive. That you know leads into your total.
Yeah. I forgot they're shooting in IMAX cameras, and I appreciate that because I like seeing it in IMAX. So.
You gotta find a way to fit Thanos in frame, man.
I mean, that all that it does is add to the pressure of making Thanos deliver, which is what this movie's all about.
Big purple guy has to actually mean something.
Yep, that's why I think we're gonna get some people gonna die real quick in this one. Some people that y'all like are gonna die real quick in this one.
Yeah, I think the body count's gonna be interesting, and also there's a couple of sentient Avengers that are in possessions of stones. So
yeah, well, we know yeah. One of them is not going to die, but he will lose a stone. The other one,
Can he live without the Soul Stone, Chad? The Mind Stone?
We've been saying for years, like literally for years, that his head has to be removed from his shoulders. It doesn't look like they're going to go quite that route. However, it looks like they're going to pry it out of his head. However, if that's the tease, and it ends up that his head is removed from his shoulders, I'm popping in the crowd. Like, we've been saying this for years, and I thought y'all weren't going to give it to me, and you did. So you've won.
So Chad, in related Marvel news, what do you make of Samuel Jackson's personal assistant and personal makeup artist making their way onto the IMDb page for Infinity War?
Nothing. Because it's IMDb, and I don't trust it. That's kind of all I got.
Can't do the culmination of the MCU without the guy who.
But this is not the culmination. Next movie is the culmination. This is,
the pre-show.
No, it's bigger than the pre-show. This is like, I can't think of a proper analogy for this, but
it's like the playing game to the playoffs.
Not even that, because it's like the conference finals before the finals. That's what this is. We're the conference finals. You've got to get here before you get to the finals. I know everybody likes to think that this is the culmination because this is the first time we're seeing Thanos and all these stones are actually in play, and it seems like all of the characters we've met are finally coming together, but
including Pepper Potts.
Yes, she's in the movie.
I will pop hard,
but they've already said that there's still some character some characters do not meet each other in this movie, and they will meet each other in the next movie. So it's not the culmination. It is the beginning of the culmination, which is why because of that is why I don't think certain people will die in this movie. They may die in the next one.
But Chad, the title of Avengers 4 should scare the shit out of you.
I mean, I don't know what the title of Avengers 4 is.
The Russo brothers have told us that we should very much be scared of the fact that they have not revealed the title for Avengers 4 and that they are holding it as closely guarded a secret as it is, because it is a spoiler, and it will scare us.
Well, that is... I didn't know that, and now I'm really intrigued. At this point, I'm barely trying to guess what happens in Infinity War,
Three people know the entire plot, apparently, according to that letter.
Yeah, that was interesting. I know Chris Evans is one of them. Most people just got their parts, and the Russos had to direct them from them only knowing what happens to their character. But Chris Evans was like, give me a script, damn it. And so he knows. I don't know who else in the cast knows, but I know he knows.
Well, he had to know because, that's the Russo's boy. I mean, that's the character that they've worked with the most over the course of three movies.
It's true. And it seems to be the one that everybody's painting the largest X on his back. I'm going to go on a limb and say, Captain America's not dying in this one. Iron Man's not dying in this one. Thor's not dying in this one. I would really hazard to guess that... How many of the original Avengers are there? Six?
Seven.
There's seven?
Yeah, there's... Thor, Hulk, Iron Man, Captain America, Black Widow, and Hawkeye.
Okay. So
six.
So I would say...
Nick Fury, if you want to count him, seven.
I would say five of the original Avengers are probably not dying in this movie. Because for the true combination, there's two things that have to happen before people really, really die. They have yet to give us Captain America saying the freaking words, Avengers Assemble. I think you get one of those, and it's only going to be one.
Came close at the end of Age of Ultron.
They tease in the Age of Ultron, which makes me believe they're going to give it to you, but it's only going to be once. But when he says it, I mean, in this one, they're all split across. Everybody's split everywhere. When he says it, it's going to be when everybody is all together.
They said that it were like 3 days where everybody was together shooting?
Yeah, so one of those 3 days, he said the damn words. And two, we left Civil War with Captain America turning down his mantle, giving away his shield, and they've said that he is the Nomad in this one. Well, goddamn it, he's going to be Captain America in the last one, and it's going to be that culmination is going to be him saying Avengers Assemble, most of the original people that we saw finally come together against Thanos, and then a bunch of them die. So people will die in this one. It won't be them. Now, some of them might die in the next one. I don't know who.
So, Chad, where's Hawkeye?
You know, honestly...
Did Joss Whedon paint a nice little farm for him to go to with Linda Cardellini and just kind of relaxing there?
See, quite honestly, I don't care where Hawkeye is.
But the Russo brothers have said he has his own special mission in the film and that he doesn't share a lot of scenes with the other people.
So... That is very curious to me. So, I mean, they could be telling the truth, or...
They could be trolling us.
They could be trolling us, and he's one of the first ones to bite the bullet. The only reason I think he doesn't is because of all of the six people that we named, the first person people would say, like, oh, he gets bumped off is Hawkeye. So I think that makes him safe.
Well, you have to remember, too, that you've got the Ronin version of the character running around there. Set photos and such.
I mean, that's fine. Most people don't know Hawkeye was Ronin anyway. I forgot until all this happened. I'm like, as far as I remember in the comics, he was Ronin until you found out he was Hawkeye, which happened in like 6 or 7 issues, and then somebody else was Ronin. So if you're a fan of Hawkeye's Ronin, yay, you get Hawkeye's Ronin. I don't care. I really think there's... Could he be doing something special? Sure, he could. However, we're dealing with intergalactic threats that have power stones that destroy entire worlds. And you're telling me the guy with the bow and arrows is going to do something with nobody else that's going to help this.
He's going to kill Thanos with a single shot.
Yeah.
I will say this is starting to feel more and more to me like Luke Skywalker in The Force Awakens. Not in the marketing campaign. Everybody kind of wondering why. What's the deal? And then we get the movie in like last 5 minutes.
I think he's in it more than 5 minutes. And the only reason I think that is...
Ritter was down there for a long time shooting.
And he there was a point he broke his hand.
Mm-hmm.
So he was doing something. So he's in the movie now. I just don't know or care what he's doing until I see it.
Maybe, just maybe, Chad, he knows where the Soul Stone is, and he's sent to go retrieve it.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And he asked Pepper Potts' rescue to go and help him on this journey.
If that ends with Thanos punching a hole through Rescue's chest, I'm all for it.
All right, so let's move on. Speaking of Marvel, and speaking of that movie that is still in theaters, still collecting massive amounts of money, Black Panther! The movie that will not quit.
Nope.
Got its Blu-ray disc and special features announcements. Still in the top 5 of the box office.
That thing comes out, the Blu-ray set comes out in like a month. And this thing is still in theaters and probably will still be there when it comes out. That's nuts.
It hit the number 3 spot on the all-time domestic box office list this weekend. Your thoughts on the movie that was, you know, delayed for so long and Marvel got crap for... not doing the African-American superhero movie, and then they did it, and now it's making all kinds of money.
Marvel kept saying, when everybody would ask, they said they had a plan, they were going to do it in time. And I mean, like it or not, they did it. They followed their, they stuck to their guns. They did their plan, and they're reaping all the benefits for it. Like there was a time that Titanic and Avatar were like thought of as the untouchable box office numbers. So for it to beat Titanic is really something, because Titanic is there. It's been there for, what, 20 years?
97.
And that movie ran months, over a year. Just nonstop to get where it's at. Did they re-release Titanic?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and there's a little re-release numbers in there, but, you know, still, this number stood the test time from 97 until, what, till Avatar came out 2009. And then until The Force Awakens came out 2 years ago. So
Jurassic World as well.
No, Jurassic World's not above it. Jurassic World, wait, is it? No, Black Panther's number 3 now, so it's just Force Awakens, Avatar, Black Panther. And then, yeah, Jurassic World's right underneath Titanic. It came close. And that movie had no business being that close. But hey, you know, whatever.
Yeah, we'll get to Colin in a minute.
Well, it's there, so you know, whatever. So, it's a milestone. There's no way it's going to catch particularly Force Awakens. I don't remember what Avatar is, but I think it's still a ways off from that. But, yeah, Titanic was once thought to be insurmountable, so for it to do that is a big deal.
And past the Avengers?
It's the highest grossing domestic comic movie of all time. For a character that nobody, the general audience, didn't know until 2 years ago. And that's pretty impressive.
It's doing what Iron Man did to start this whole thing. Surpassing expectations with a character that's little known, and it's going to have major implications going forward for the entire Hollywood industry, really.
Yeah.
Because it's going to, you know, talking about, you know, we're talking about a coming to America too, Chad. Like, it's opening all kinds of doors to all kinds of new and interesting projects. And Ryan Coogler can pretty much do whatever he wants now as far as his next project goes. So, I mean, it's going to, I think, propel Michael B. Jordan. I think Creed 2, whenever it comes out, will open to bigger numbers because he's in it.
It comes out supposedly in November.
Yeah.
They just started shooting.
I mean, I think it's a huge cultural phenomenon that is very important to a lot of people, and I think it sends the right message.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said before, like, there have been other Marvel movies, and everybody likes them, everybody goes and spends money, but it's when they become these events, and Black Panther became an event.
And the question now, in my mind, is can they eventitize Captain Marvel the same way? I mean, we're in a post-Wonder Woman world, so they won't be first.
Mm-hmm. That's hard to say. My first guess is no. I don't think you need to make things an event. I think Avengers needs to be an event, because it's always the bringing together of your multiple characters. I don't think solo movies need to be an event. If they are an event, that's even better, but I don't think they need to be an event. So my first thought is that no, Captain Marvel won't be an event, but I mean, every opportunity for them to make an event is there. But part of making an event is everything surrounding the movie coming to catching everyone, including the general audience. That's what happened with Black Panther. That's what happens with Avengers. That's what happens with Star Wars. It becomes so into the zeitgeist that everybody gets caught up in it and has to see what it's about. So, part of that is really on them, but a lot of that is just up to the audience. So that's why I can't really say if it's going to be there or not, but it has the opportunity to be there.
I think it's going to be a really interesting thing to see. Because like I said, Wonder Woman, you know, was not intended to be an event. When we left that screening 2 weeks before the movie came out, we didn't think we were going to be in that place with those kind of numbers and that kind of acclaim coming out of that movie.
Yeah, but that's because we were going in like with very low expectations, and
Three-star match.
Yeah, and I would say that it exceeded our expectations. And because of who the character is, when it exceeded expectations, that's what caught it up in the event. I'd say that Wonder Woman should have done better than it did, and the reason that it didn't was because of the movie that came before it. Batman vs. Superman, which left such a bad taste in people's mouths that I think it tainted what Wonder Woman could have done. So the fact that it did what it did was miraculous, but that's because, again, it's an event.
So let's move on to another Disney property. So Chad, while I was busy promoting WrestleMania weekend and having a good time in New Orleans and watching Ring of Honor shows and having fun watching The Undertaker destroy John Cena in 2.5 minutes and screaming my bloody head off, a new Solo trailer dropped. Your thoughts on a Lando-centric Solo trailer?
So,
everything you've heard about me is true, Chad.
So the first thing with these trailers, is that, well, this one you see Han more, but you don't really see Han a lot in the, as much as you think you get for a main character. And I think that's where most people are going to throw their focus, is that, you know, there's not a whole lot of Solo in these Solo trailers. And I think that's for a reason. That's because they chose to go this route with Han Solo, and people have a very distinct idea of who Han Solo is because it's Harrison Ford. So I think what they're doing is, I think he's going to be fine as Han Solo, but you've seen the people on the internet, and it's like, hashtag not my Han Solo. You give them too much Han Solo in this trailer, and they're going to get up in arms and like tank the well before you even get to the movie. And the movie's already got a hill to climb.
Hence the reason why they've been very, very careful with how much footage they release and when.
Yes. So, this trailer... So, my overall thoughts of this trailer is that it's a very good trailer. I feel a lot better about this movie after seeing this trailer. Now, in doing that, they focused on characters that people are gravitating towards. Primarily, Donald Glover as Lando Calrissian, because Donald Glover is very, very hot right now. And it looks like he's, like, I watched the trailer and I heard him talk, and I'm like, and at first it takes me out because it's like, it's not what I pictured in my mind as a young Lando, but by the end of it, I'm like, okay, so this is him, his take on a young Lando, and I'm down for the ride. But most people are already on board with this. So you throw a whole bunch of Lando up there, you give a feel of what the movie is, and the people are like, okay, I'll go on this journey. I don't know about this Han Solo dude, but everything else seems cool, so it'll probably be okay. And I think that's what they're going for in these trailers, and I think they're hitting it if that's the case.
You know where it's premiering?
It's a festival.
Cannes.
Yeah. Well, that's like 2-3 weeks before?
First week of May.
So, well, yeah, it'll be telling if they let us get social media thoughts. I know there's no way we get a review, but if we get, if they let them tweet out their social media thoughts, that'll be kind of telling. I mean, from everything else I've heard, the script is supposedly one of the best Star Wars scripts ever. But
how could that be, Chad? Because Lord Miller got fired.
Well, because, yes, Lord, the script never changed. The script Lord Miller shot is the same script Ron Howard
Allegedly. Yeah. From some dude who really, if you read the entire piece, sounds like he's a PR hack that was sent out there by Lucasfilm to kind of quell PR fears.
Yep, I mean, I can't argue that, but it's all we got right now. We'll find out more later, but it sounds like Lord Miller was just aimless on the set, whereas Ron Howard was just like, shoot, done, shoot, like it, shoot again, like it, wrap, let's go, and kept moving on. And if that's the case, then this movie should be fine, because universally, they said this script is great. It just came down to
the execution.
Yes, and if that's the case, then we're fine. But we won't know for a couple more weeks. Again, I think Alden's going to be fine as Han Solo. I think there's going to be lots of people that are like, he's still not my Han Solo, but as long as people are like, it's okay, he's different, but okay, then he's fine.
And did you enjoy meeting Chewie's wife for like 30 seconds?
Was that in there? Mm-hmm. I missed that part.
Well, I mean, we knew that Chewie had a wife from the Christmas special, but she's in the movie.
How did I miss that?
He's kissing her goodbye.
Okay. I only watched the trailer once, and I watched it in the middle of WrestleMania, so yeah, there might have been some of that. But that is
when would you have had time during WrestleMania, Chad?
Are you serious? The trailer's like 2 minutes long. There's a whole bunch of slow spots in WrestleMania.
All right, so let's move on. So, Chad, this week, people in the United States celebrate Equal Pay Day. And you know what the good people at Birth and Movies Death did to celebrate Equal Pay Day?
I actually have no idea.
They put out a open letter to DC Films and Warner Brothers with a list of over 45 capable, qualified female directors to direct a Batgirl movie. We learned this week that Joss Whedon's Batgirl movie has been revived by a female writer, Christina Hudson.
Yeah.
Hudson. And she's going to take over writing duties, kind of revamp it, because, you know, Joss Whedon couldn't come up with an idea at all. No approach to it whatsoever. And, you know, his, you know, time on the Justice League set wasn't any kind of reason for that at all. We got a new writer on Batgirl. It seems to still be a thing they want to do. And what are your thoughts on, you know, the possibilities of a woman directing that movie?
Okay, so I'm of two minds of this. My first mind, I'll address the woman writer, woman director thing. That is a very great idea that Birth Movies Death had. I want to go see that list now, because I can't think of that many female directors, but I don't know. That's kind of the point, that we can't think of that many off the top of our head. So somebody making this list that would have seen other stuff, I think that's a valuable resource, so we can be familiar with all these other people and know there's other people out there. As far as Christina Hudson writing Batgirl, of the things that she's done, the only thing that I know, is the Bumblebee movie, which we haven't seen yet. So
Mr. Cena has participated in that.
Yes, he has. That's one of his many breaks that he takes nowadays. So I can't comment on her writing style or how she develops movie stories, anything like that. It is interesting to me that she's also tapped to write the Birds of Prey movie, and has since been moved to Batgirl, which would tell me that she has a hand on the Batgirl, and they probably like what she was doing with Birds of Prey. And since Batgirl's already been out there, they want to move forward with this one, because it's probably further along than Birds of Prey would be. Now, my second mind is, DC still doesn't know what the hell they're doing, and they don't need to do Batgirl right now. They need to get their house in order first, and then proceed to move with stuff. Right now, to me, right now, they should essentially be coming down with Aquaman's already done. They're working on posting that and probably do some reshoots here soon and that kind of stuff. Shazam is currently shooting. Wonder Woman 2 is coming down the pike. Apparently, freaking Suicide Squad is getting shot this year. I don't think they should do that one, but if they're that far along, concentrate on making that the best you can make it, since you are your gung-ho for doing this. That's fine. Figure out what you're doing with Matt Reeves' Batman, and get a goddamn Superman movie done. That should be your plate. Finish half of that plate. Let everybody digest that plate, half that plate. Be like, I like this plate. Can I have some more? Then you move to other things, because right now, it just with the recent track record is, You can't walk down the street and chew bubblegum at the same time. And here you are trying to do it again. So you have to prove something first for DC.
I agree. It was interesting to hear Joaquin Phoenix's take on, you know, different comic book writers had different interpretations of the Joker. So why couldn't different actors have different interpretations?
I forgot about that movie. I agree with him. I still don't think that movie should exist. So there's that.
And I mean, I think that this is a good step. I do want to see a female director and female writer on that movie if it comes to pass. But Chad, what are your thoughts on Zack Snyder finally kind of opening his mouth and saying some things?
So yeah, that's what all last week was Zack has been busy on Vero, which is, I don't know exactly what it is, but it looks kind of like Twitter, but not. And fans would ask questions and he would answer with sometimes direct or sometimes very, very vague answers about really what was not even Justice League. It was Batman versus Superman. And I read everything he said, and what it came down to me was is that Zack Snyder, on a base level, understands these characters. Like, he understands who these characters are, but he also wants to tell his own types of stories with these characters, and those two things don't necessarily jive all the way. And he has, like, in his mind, he's making this big grand epic featuring these characters and doing these new things with them. However, in his execution of it, it completely goes against who the characters are. So, and that's really hard to understand, considering I'm saying that he does, on some level, understand these characters. It's just the way he wants, what he wants to do with them. He doesn't realize that it just doesn't agree with these characters. So, but with all that said, I mean, the more that comes out, the more intrigued I am of what exactly he wanted to do. I never want to see that version. I think he's done making superhero films, or at least DC superhero films, as he should be. But if he just has this need or want to convey this story, there's different ways he can do it. I know people talk about releasing the Snyder Cut of Justice League. I don't want to see that, because I think it's going to turn out just like the Diner Cut of Superman 2, which story-wise is better, but because we're doing 20 years later, it's, you know, animatics and drawing boards and that kind of stuff. I don't want to see that stuff. I think I said to you that, you know, there's the route of just making it into a goddamn comic book. Do the whole story into a comic book, and there you go. The Zack Snyder version of his Justice League trilogy. Or, I heard somebody else say this, maybe, like, since he has all these behind-the-scenes photos and stuff, make, like, a big behind-the-scenes book that details what he wanted to do, what he did, and what he wanted to do through these movies, and convey it that way. I think he can put those, either one of those options together, and I think they'll make enough money to justify having it. I think either one of the last two are better options than a cut-up of dailies and sketches to tell the story.
It depends on how harsh he wants to be toward Warners and how honest he wants to be about the process.
Yeah.
I mean, he signed a new look deal after they let him go, the first look deal. So he's going to continue to have, you know, a working relationship with them. And there's only so far you're going to go when you can still have a working relationship with somebody. So, and I also think there has to be some distance there. I mean, look, Edgar still hasn't said a word about what happened between him and Marvel. And that's been 4 years ago. And, you know, he's done one movie since. He didn't get asked about it on his press tour. I mean,
he did, but it was only like one or two guys.
Right. So, I mean, I just think there has to be some distance. And then I also think that he has to make decisions about his working relationships and how important it is to him to get his vision out there against getting more creative visions going forward out there.
Now, in my head, the last two options have to be done in conjunction with Warner Brothers. So I don't think there's any, if those were to happen, there would be no rehashing of how he got dismissed and anything like that. It'll just be like, here, let me tell you the story that I wanted to tell that I was not able to tell because of the way the movies were received. And if you like it, you like it. If you don't, you don't. But we're not getting into like the behind the scenes studio fights. And I think that's the only way any of those options ever happen.
I mean, I think that if he eventually gets let out of his deal or has to go find another studio home, and I also think, again, with the passage of time, I mean, I think that with Baflack, too, I think as we get the passage of time, we're going to hear more going forward.
With that, also, it will mean that people that work there no longer work there. That's the easier sell for people that had nothing to do with it than people that were there can have hurt feelings.
Right. So, Chad, Fox having some issues with their Marvel properties here, buddy? Focus on Deadpool 2?
I mean, there's been a whole bunch.
Am I going to be 90 years old by the time that New Mutants actually comes out?
The way it's going,
like, is Josh Boone actually going to get to release that movie in his lifetime?
The way it's going, it's kind of iffy. I mean, every few months, it's like, yeah, it's coming. Nah. You didn't see that. It's over here now. You can't push it back any further than this. If New Mutants gets moved again, it just ain't happening.
We're in Gambit territory at this point.
Yeah, well, it's a little worse than Gambit, because Gambit keeps saying that, you know, it's going to happen. We start pre-production, but nothing ever happens. Which, again, they're scheduled to start shooting in freaking June. We don't have a director, but they're scheduled to start shooting down the street in June. How? Houseway? That's no. Just stop, Fox. You just gotta wait a year and you're done. It's over. But that's neither here nor there. See, Gambit is another special thing. This is a little worse because, no, you actually made this movie.
And I'm gonna have to make it again.
Yeah, people have seen this movie and then you're like, nah, let's change about half of this.
So you change about half of it and then you show it to people and they're like, eh.
So, yeah, I mean, by the time this is all over, there might be two completely different finished versions of this movie. And we'll probably never see one of them. But New Mutants, this is like so weird to me because we've seen production issues, we've seen delays and all that stuff, but
to be coming out this month, have a trailer drop in January for coming this month, and then to bump it back to February, so a full year pretty much, basically, and then to push it back again to August, mm-hmm. and to have word come out that, like, your director showed you his stuff, you didn't like it, told him to reshoot some of it, half of it. He went out back and he took all your notes and he shot another version of the film, brought back your version of the film, and you still didn't like it. So you let him go back and make his original movie, a straight horror movie, the way that he wanted to. And now you gotta go back and get everybody back together and shoot that version of the movie.
You know, I hope that's that version of the story is true. Because at least with that version of the story, the people that come out looking terrible...
Or the studio. Well,
it's the studio. I mean, they're gonna come out looking terrible anyway. But in this version of the story, it's like, okay, this is the story this guy wants to tell. This is the story that y'all agreed upon. Y'all soon changed it afterwards. He complied. And now you want to go back to the story he originally wanted to tell. Why? Because two horror movies have come out that have done gangbusters at the box office. Now you can add a third with A Quiet Place. And you're looking like, well, do we have any horror movies? I don't know, boss. I thought we stopped production and everything because Disney about to buy it. No, wait. We got one. But we finished that one, right? No, but we can't.
We took the horror elements out.
We took all that out, but... Yeah, boss, you know, but... Disney is about to buy us. Who's stopping us? Nobody. So let's go back and do that. That's what this is. They look like a bunch of bumbling idiots. But again, by the time the movie comes out and they can really get the egg on their face, it'll be next August. That means... If the Disney deal is not done, it's like right around the corner from being done. And you can
It's done. 18 months, 12 to 18 months from last November.
So, okay, so, oh yeah, yeah, so, what's that? That's like around this time next year. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, hell. Well, okay, with that being said, at this point, yeah, that date is there, but it's like they threw a dart at the board, like, okay, Disney buying this after this date. When can we take this movie? August. Fine. That gives us enough time. Disney gonna buy us, and then we just gonna ease on out of this, and they gotta worry about this stupid movie because they gonna take it over anyway.
And it's also a matter of how quickly they can move into production on X-Force, and how quick they can get the X-Force movie out. Are they gonna do a Deadpool 3, or is Deadpool 3 gonna be its own separate deal? Because they're basically using Deadpool 2 as an X-Force prelude. Mm-hmm.
I think if Deadpool 2 does very well, Deadpool and the X-Force movie are safe. They'll keep them going as long as Reynolds is on contract for, because they like money. They'll keep them going. The rest of this stuff, Dark Phoenix needs to do gangbusters and not like regular X-Men box office numbers. If you don't know what those are, go look them up, because so there's tiers to this. There's Marvel tier, and then there's like DC tier, which is way lower than Marvel tier. And then down below that is Fox tier, because outside of Deadpool, everything else has been in Fox tier. None of the X-Men movies are higher than freaking Justice League, I think, has more money than Apocalypse and most of the X-Men movies. And we laugh at Justice League for getting dusted by Black Panther. So they need to creep into the DC territory if they want to stay safe. And I don't think they can do it, because most people don't have any faith, or most people don't even like
you these alienated X-Men your fan base, and you're not giving straight answers about whether or not LaLandra is even in this movie, or how you're going to do what you're saying you're going to do.
I don't feel any enthusiasm just from general audiences about the X-Men.
When the guy who wrote and botched this thing up the first time is gonna write and direct it this time, why should I have any faith that he's gonna get it more right?
I still, for the life of me, cannot believe that they're leaving this movie. I mean, this is what this particular version of the X-Men franchise, this is the movie that it hangs on. They're giving it to him to do it. I understand why they're giving it to him writing-wise, because they've stuck their wagon to him, and he's been hit or miss. But to direct it?
This would be like Nolan exiting the Batman, The Dark Knight Rises, and letting Goyer direct it.
Yeah, fanboys, think about that. Y'all hate David Goyer. I don't think he deserves the vitriol y'all give him, but y'all hate David Goyer. I think way higher of David Goyer than I do of Simon Kinberg. Unless his name is attached to an animated Star Wars thing, I don't think Simon Kinberg is very good at all. So, and y'all, again, I think Goyer did write the Dark Knight trilogy. He's got a hand in all of those. Say what you will about Man of Steel, I don't really think the script is the issue with that one. I know people will argue with me. Come at me. I don't care. We can have that fight. But Kinberg has the feather in Kinberg's cap is Days of Future Past, and I don't think it's that good. Fight me. I don't think it's that good. So this is the guy y'all gave. I'm glad you said David Goyer. Y'all have given Barkin Ben David Goyer the keys to the X-Men franchise. How do you think that's going to turn out?
Indeed. Hence the reason why they moved it from November to February.
I mean, the story they're telling on that one is more palatable to me than the New Mutants one. Is that they want to go in and do some reshoots, but because their cast isn't available until later, and they don't want to rush their special effects. See, i.e. Justice League, they pushed it back.
i.e. Apocalypse.
That is more palatable to me than what's going on with New Mutants. I don't think either one of them is good. Look, I think the better situation is Dark Phoenix, but I don't think that movie's going to be good.
We will see, because that it's going to be a whole nother landscape for Fox going forward.
I mean, if it's good, it just gums up the works of what Disney's going to do. If it's bad, then just stick a fork in X-Men. They're done until Marvel gets good and ready to resuscitate them.
This is true. I mean, I'm more interested in what they're going to end up doing with the Fantastic Four rights than the X-Men rights.
I'm like the optimist and idealist to me is hoping that somewhere in some deep, dark place, Disney and Fox made a deal for Fantastic Four before all this happened, just to get some characters into, like, the last Avengers movie. And that's part of the secret as to why we don't know what's going on. I don't think that happened, but that's what I'm hoping. But one way or another, like, I would almost put money on it. You're going to see Fantastic Four in the MCU, if not in the movie, and like cameoing on screen before there's even a mention of the X-Men in these movies.
I would tend to agree. So Chad, we commented on the fact that Jurassic Park Fallen Kingdom, or Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, came out and announced that they're going to have a sequel before Jurassic World 2 comes out. We now learn that franchise mastermind and former Star Wars Episode 9 director Colin Trevorrow will return to directing duties on Jurassic World 3. Your thoughts on Colin being employed as a director again for the next, 2 years?
It's so conflicting just because the second one hasn't come out yet. So normally that would tell me that the studio is very confident in what they have in the second one. However, the flip side of that is, if they're that confident, why isn't that guy doing the third one? I understand why you would get Colin.
Because Boyega was just a placeholder for Trevorrow anyway. Because it's Trevorrow's script and it's Trevorrow's ideas. He just couldn't execute it because he was supposed to be filming a Star Wars movie right now.
I understand that, but
speaking of which, by the way, JJ and them are back to work in June.
Yeah. Yes, they are.
In June.
Yeah. Yeah.
I understand that. That is insane that he got confirmed as director like 6 months ago, and they're now going to go into principal photography.
Yep. I am not surprised by none of this, because they got, they ain't moving that date. You get on this train or you get run over. So I'm not, I mean, yes, it's insane to think about, but it's this type of insanity is like what I expect, so I'm not surprised.
Well, I mean, they were shooting scenes for 8 before 7 came out. Yeah. So, I mean.
But we didn't have a script for 9 until after 8 came out. Well, apparently he got one in. There is one. I'm sure they're still working on it, but there's one that they're basing the story on. They're probably fine-tuning it as we speak.
There's another rabbit hole to jump down, because I think it's going to be very interesting to see how people react to 9 with Mr. Terrio on board.
I mean he's got to redeem his rap after Batman vs Superman and Justice League, which I don't really blame. He has a big hand in Batman vs Superman, but not so much for Justice League. Justice League is just a mess on its own. Batman vs Superman, yeah, he wrote it. But this is like
handpicked by Ben. This is my guy.
Well, yeah. He just won the Oscar. Hey, Zach, can I bring my writer along? Sure. Are we still doing it? But I'm still doing the story I want to do, right? Sure. He'll just write it up. Fine. Let's go. I think that's how that went. But back to Colin. I understand everything you're saying. He wrote it. He's producing. I get why they get him to come back. He did the first one. It did gangbusters. But you're telling me that you're so confident in the second one to continue what you've built on in the first one that you wouldn't get the guy that's behind the camera for that one to come back? It's only because Colin has been so heavily involved in the franchise all the way through, and he had he had other obligations that kept him from doing the second one. Am I not more skeptical of this? But studios, you know, we've seen them by nature. They're conservative by nature. So if there's something to get them out of that, to like take a risk on making greenlighting a third one, and I know in their mind they're not making that much of a risk because it's already on this established property. It's Jurassic Park. People always come out to see it. Look at what Jurassic World did. This is a safe franchise to do this with. So they're already in a safe mind space when they're thinking about it. But we've seen the second one. We think this is good enough to continue what's been built upon. Why am I going to rock the boat and not have the same guy direct it and keep the other guy that's so heavily involved doing everything else except directing it? So that's where I'm split. Like, on one hand, it sounds like the second movie is really good. On the other hand, if these conservative-ass studio people that don't like rocking the boat but like making a lot of money are going to jettison this director simply to bring the other guy back in, is that what does that say really say about the movie?
I'm curious because it's cart before the horse to me. You can save all these announcements for the week after the movie comes out. Literally, the week after the movie comes out. You don't have to be making these announcements 3 and 4 months outside of the movie.
I think that we got the announcement says that they heard the reception to the trailer, which, I mean, for the most part,
they're about to put out a second trailer.
And is there a second trailer already?
No, this.
Oh, there's another spot.
There's another spot. Well, they're getting ready to do the second full trailer. They do the first trailer where you see Goldblum testifying in front of the committee and then shoving the ball off the side. By the way, speaking of trailers, your movie, your boy and his dog movie, Alpha, you know when that movie comes out?
When?
November.
It's supposed to come out in April.
November.
No, it was supposed to come out in April.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why we're going to have been seeing Boy and His Dog trailers for a full year before we actually see the movie.
I mean, like, I swear to God, the first time we saw it, I thought it was coming out in, like, November of last year. And then because we've seen it so much, I actually paid attention to what they said, and I know it was, like, April. And I'm like, I'm sick of seeing this goddamn boy and his dog. And then it just went away, and I just thought that it came out and, like, got suffocated under Black Panther and everything else. But you're telling me that this movie that has to be done got kicked to November. Yeller it. Let it die now and be done with it, because clearly that's where this thing is headed.
Yeah, I mean, my thing is, they're getting ready to release a second trailer for Jurassic World. You're about to kick off the marketing campaign in earnest. I mean, poor Chris Pratt's going to move from doing the publicity tour for Infinity War right into the publicity tour for Jurassic World. And I think, you know, I'm not upset about this because I do feel like for as great as The Monster Calls is, J.A. Boyega is a placeholder director from an indie scene that was chosen by Colin to execute Colin's vision. And Colin lucked up because, you know, he screwed up his Jurassic World, Star Wars responsibilities, which I think at the end of the day, he's going to be grateful for, because he won't have to answer that kind of fan pressure. Like it or not, for as crappy as that Jurassic World movie is, there are not enough diehard Jurassic Park fans that were going to come at him for, you know, the way he changed Wong's character, or the way he departed from Crichton's books, or the way that he, you know, the way they didn't have any of the Hammond children in the movie. You know, there was not enough Jurassic Park loyalists to come at him in that way. There are Star Wars loyalists who are still coming after Gareth Edwards, after Terry Gilliam came out and basically said, "I saved the movie." Like, there are going to be Star Wars nerds who are going to be angry and upset, and vitriolically so, ask Rian Johnston. And so at the end of the day, I think Colin's going to be happy sticking with the Jurassic World franchise.
I agree.
But that's the only reason Boyega even has that job, is because Colin was otherwise occupied. And so now we're going to get Colin coming back. Again, Colin coming back, the release date and all of that could have waited until after so you can see the reaction, so you can see the box office numbers. And if you're extremely profitable, it just makes sense. Oh, yeah, of course. There, you know, the dinosaurs will return in Jurassic World 3.
I think because of the time that we got the news, because I forgot about the release date, but yeah, but the release date and the news that Colin is coming back, I think we got that news drop when we did, because the reception, as much as I know about it, seems lukewarm to the trailer. I mean, I really and truly, when Jurassic World the first one came out, I thought the reception, the buzz about that was lukewarm too, and then we saw what happened with that. I thought this movie would do fine, but the trailer echoes everything that people didn't like about The Lost World and Jurassic Park 3. So I think they put this out like, this is how much confidence we have in this, so you shouldn't be worried about it. This movie's going to be great. And that's fine if the movie is great or at least good and makes money, but if it doesn't, then what the hell are you going to do? So I agree with you. I would at least, I mean, wait till, if you don't wait till the movie comes out, wait till you're closer to the movie, not 3 or 4 months out. But, you know, that's their gamble.
And again, who are you alleviating fears with? There's not a huge diehard Jurassic Park fan base. There's not a Jurassic Park subreddit.
Jurassic Park is a weird one because I think it does have a lot of fans, but their fans are not like
internet trolls.
Well, not, I mean, yeah, clearly not that.
They're not the people who hang out in the subsection of Reddit.
No, I think a large part of why Jurassic Park has so many fans is that it has fans that are so nostalgic for the first one.
Hear anybody talk about Lost World or 3.
No, but so when you bring out a Jurassic Park movie, they that pull of nostalgia is like, I'm going to go see this. And I really like Jurassic Park, but it's not something that I'm ever going to like decorate my house in. But I like it enough that I will spend my money on it and spend my money on it to see it more than once. So I think they're unique in that way. That like, I mean, I really, they're like the best fans there are, because they will come out and support you, but they will not destroy you if you make some stuff they don't like. Why? Because half of their franchise is crap. And they're fine with it because they love the first one so much. But that doesn't mean they're going to like say this movie is terrible. They just will not go see it. And
they'll only see it twice. They won't see it four times.
Yeah. They'll see it and they'll move on with their lives.
Indeed. So, Chad, what are the Fast and the Furious movies built on?
Family.
And what happens to family sometimes, especially like around the holidays or certain other big events?
Get tired of seeing each other and y'all fight.
What has happened to Dwayne Johnson and Vin Diesel?
Oh, it's past the holiday party. This is like a lifetime family feud here.
The Clampets and the McCoys?
Yeah, it's like
Packfields and McCoys.
Your cousin came over that one time and he said the wrong thing. You've been holding the grudge for 20 years. That's where this is at.
Crazy Uncle Joe showed up to the party a little intoxicated.
Like, what you doing?
Spilled a few family secrets.
Ain't never been back since. That is where we're at.
So, Chad, your thoughts on The Rock saying that he has a fundamental disagreement with Vin Diesel in his trailer over the movie-making process?
That whole article, that part of that article was so interesting because
his wording is very peculiar there. Fundamental disagreements about the movie-making process.
Yeah.
Confrontation in trailer.
And it, specifically in his trailer. Like,
right.
He wasn't going to Vin's. And like reading that and knowing how,
confirming that we didn't shoot.
They didn't shoot a scene together. But like this confrontation in the trailer thing, like reading that and thinking about how much alpha males these guys are, like, it had to be a struggle as to where this meeting went down. And the fact that it took place in The Rock's trailer over Vin's trailer, in my mind, reads that the dominant one controlling all this is not Big Daddy Vin. It was The Rock. Everybody bowed to him, and Vin had to go over there to him. I know Vin didn't want to go, but that's what happened. And then they had their air quotation marks, confrontation. And I wish I remember the exact end of that quote, but he said, I have no ill will towards him. We just have a disagreement on how things go. And he stopped, and the dude made sure to know this. He smirked. He's like, well, let me not say it. No ill will. Like, this dude, for the Rock, who was very media savvy, doesn't say the wrong things, for him to purposely go back. He didn't have to do that. He did not have to say it. Or at the very least, when he did it while he's talking to the guy, he'd be like, okay, that last part is off the record. No, he let him go with it. He let him write it. That tells me that he absolutely hates Vin Diesel. He does not like this dude. I don't know what happened between Fast 8 and 9, but something happened that these dudes want to rock each other in the jaw when they see him. With that last word, it lets me know that the only way they will work together on these movies again is if it happens like this one, where they don't have to be physically on set together at the same time. And it also tells me that he probably won't, just between this and Tyrese Wyden, it probably means that he's not going to continue in the Fast movies proper, but more or less stay in his corner with the Hubs. With the Hobbs thing, I think that's the way it's going to go. I think that is to appease both people, probably more so Vin Diesel, where he's like, I got my franchise back. I'm the king of this one. He got this corner over here. And it will appease him up until the point that the Hobbs movies start making more money than his movies. And then Fast 12, Hobbs and Toretto, Death to His Part. Something stupid like that.
Well, we're only going to 10. Fast 10 is as far as we're going to go. So we got two more movies to go. And I would not be... And this Hobbs spinoff movie is going to be the first one out. Justin Lin's coming back for Fast 9. Mm. Look, man. I think it's... I can't blame Tyrese for taking up for his boy. But, I mean... What kind of fundamental disagreement about the movie-making process can you have that leads to a confrontation in a trailer? Like, not showing... I mean, some of the original stuff that was spouted out there was about candy asses not showing up to work on time and not being professional. Like, you know, was he being too much of a diva? Was he delaying production? I mean, Lord knows F. Gary Gray did the best he could to showrun between the two of them. I mean... What happened? What fundamental difference in filmmaking can you have?
So, let's just have a little timeline. So, they're good at the end. Fast 8 is the one where Paul Walker dies, right?
And Paul Walker dies, and it becomes the Vin Diesel show out of necessity because everybody else was already busy, and getting people to come back was a crazy thing.
So, it's now... These movies start making $1 billion. Paul Walker is gone. It's now the Vin Diesel show. He's heading billion-dollar movies.
Like, to the point where he's, like, having the yay or nay on directors. Yeah. And there was fear within Universal at one point that he was going to try and one direct a movie himself.
So, if that's not a recipe for somebody going full-tilt diva, I don't know what is. So, and then you have The Rock, who, he's got his own ego, but let's think about his background. He comes from... the wrestling background, and it shows in the type of work that he does, that he goes straight from movie to movie to keep going, because he's used to just working and grinding every day. So if you got a full tilt diva that's like, I run this show and everything starts when I want it to start, and you have this guy that's like, I'm up at 4 a.m. after going to sleep at 2 a.m. and I'm the first one up here, I've already worked out, I'm ready to go, let's get this going, and he's like, it goes when I show up. I can see that being the basis of your fundamental disagreement of filmmaking process. That is my guess. That is my guess of where it sprung out. It sprung out of that. And then, I don't know where it went wrong, but again, when you have that kind of difference and two big-ass egos, that's just what's going to happen. They're just going to keep butting heads until something has to be done. And in that moment, I think concessions were made on both sides. But I really think Rock showed up with the upper hand when Vin had to come to him to settle this dispute. So If it's anything close to what I'm saying, I cannot imagine these two dudes working together again, physically
least,
being the same.
At least not in the next year and a half.
No.
But we both never thought we'd see Bret Hart ever again in the WWE. We never thought in our lifetime we would see Eric Bischoff working for Vince McMahon. We never thought we'd see Sting in a WWE ring. And yet we lived long enough to see all of those things happen. And we will live long enough to see CM Punk in a WWE ring again. Because never say never.
Yeah.
And Vince is always open to, you know, forgiving old grudges and all of that.
Because Vince likes money.
And Vin does too. And if Vin does 9 and 9 does not go over as well as 7 and 8 did, and the studio sees that, and Hobbs makes more money, the spinoff makes more money, and is better well received, I think it's going to bridge some things for 10.
I can see that happening.
Now, I don't know if they're going to shoot 9 and 10 together, but you know, I think that, you know, for all involved, Hobbs is so intimately tied to the second half of that story from 5 on. That, you know, you kind of have to have him for the conclusion. You can't just, hey, here's your badge. Go back to doing what you were doing before. We'll never see you again.
No, you're right. I can see that happening.
Indeed. So, Chad, speaking of professional wrestling, we attended a small event known as WrestleMania over the weekend. What were your thoughts, sir, on the show of shows?
So, there was a point that I thought this could go down as, like, the greatest WrestleMania. And then that point came and went because the show was 20 freaking hours and it would never, never, ever end. There was a lot I liked. I really, really liked the Charlotte Asuka match. I don't like the finish of that match. I would have put Asuka over and let her have the title for a year where she will then have to face the quickly developing star of the second match that I liked the most, which would be Ronda Rousey. It just made sense that you put all the, invest all this time into Ronda Rousey, that you have her face the unbeatable in the wrestling world. They didn't go that way. Charlotte retained the title. I was upset about it. I still am. But Charlotte's not the champion anymore. So, you know, there's that. I like seeing Daniel Bryan return. I like what they were going for in that match with him being out in the first half. I see the logic behind it. However, at that point, this is like hour 6 for people that are sitting there and they want to see Daniel Bryan and you've just laid him out for 15 minutes. So when he gets tagged in, it doesn't have the effect you want because the crowd is just kind of done at this point. And that's the theme of the second half of the show, is that the crowd is just kind of done. So things that could have gone over better. Probably didn't. That probably has some effect on Shinsuke and AJ, but they still had a fine match. It just wasn't what it could have been. And it completely caused the crapping on of the main event, which was Brock Lesnar destroying Roman Reigns for 20 minutes. That match setup was not a good idea. None of the execution was a good idea. And then to top it all off, you put it at the end of freaking 8 hours. Yes, the crowd is gone.
They're physically, this is awful.
Yeah. The crowd has completely left the building. They're sitting there, but they've left the building. Anything else is going to be more entertaining than what they're seeing downstairs. So, all in all, I thought it was a fine show. I thought it could have been better. I think time killed it. Also, can't talk about WrestleMania and not talk about your boy. I still maintain I did not need to see or should have seen an Undertaker match. However, he squashed John Cena in 2.5 minutes. I enjoy that thoroughly, but he needs to be done. And it's clear that he's not because of something happening later.
Chad, for the first time in a very long time, The Undertaker will wrestle 2 matches within a month as he will take on Rusev. In a casket match.
Which is why this match was 2.5 minutes. Gotta save his other 5 minutes for this match.
He's back, Chad. He has returned. He took his gear back.
That was so stupid. You had the perfect retirement and you just piss it away.
Okay. Took it back. Just like Captain America will take back his shield.
But I think his shield will be given back. if we're the metaphor for Tony Stark in this equation, we wouldn't give that shit back. It was back on the table. What you talking about? I don't see it. It's not here. Go away.
Okay. The triple threat for the Intercontinental title that started off the night was probably my favorite match of the night. I felt like after the Taker spot, which is dead in the middle of the show, everything after that was, the crowd was gone. Like, Daniel's reaction should have been deafening.
Yes.
And it was not nearly deafening.
Yeah, before he came out, I was like, get ready for the biggest pop of the night. And then he came out, and I'm like, that's not the biggest pop. All right.
Out of energy, man. Been there since like 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, it's just too long. It's just too long. And the main event went over to damn near 10:30. 10:30! Too long, Vince. Too long.
And so she had a lot of swerves this Sunday night, you know? Asuka not winning. Shinsuke not winning. Taker winning. Seth going over. Roman losing to Brock instead of Brock beating Roman.
Yeah.
The heel turn for Shinsuke. All those were not expected outcomes. And so he did good swerves. It was just a matter of your crowd only has so much energy in them. And, you know, when it's 10:30 and you've been there 11 o'clock at night and you've been there for... I mean, I saw parents with kids. So, like, families is his big target demographic for the last 10 years now. You know what they've been doing? 9 o'clock, those parents were taking those kids out and going home.
You got to, man. It's just too long for a kid to sit still.
Yeah. And, you know, for a kid to go to his first WrestleMania and not see the main event?
I mean, they ain't miss much.
Are you okay with what he did? Because I'm okay with Brock doing shit just for the sake of doing it. Like, Vince got mad, and I understand why Vince got mad, because Vince is very buttoned up, and Vince is being very protective of his product. But to me, to sell that as one of the most brutal matches in the history of WrestleMania, you had to have him bleed. Now, did you have to have him bleed to the point where he had to have 35 staples in his head, and they had to literally throw towels at Roman as soon as the match was over to sop up all the blood? Maybe not, but the man did have to bleed.
Yeah.
And the fact that we went 7 hours at a WrestleMania without one daggum announce table being broken, and the one announce table that gets broken is done on accident? Like, it's not a planned spot? So you were going to go an entire WrestleMania without a table spot? Like, what kind of stuff is that? That makes no sense.
I don't mind not having a table spot. I mean, don't get me wrong, when I go into WrestleMania, I'm imagining that somebody's table is going to be annihilated. But it doesn't faze me not to have it. I do think the reason I don't, like, completely destroy that match, Brock and Roman, is the fact that he did bleed. And then
just bleed, like, profusely.
Yeah. So that just drove home the point that Brock is trying to kill this dude, and he still won't give up. Like, I mean, they already established that the F5, nobody kicked out of the F5 in over a year, and all this other stuff, and Roman kicked out of 5. And not only he kicked out of 5, he kicked out of, like, 3 of them while he's, like, got a gusher off his head. It drives home the point. I understand Vince is mad, but
I didn't stop Vince from showing it.
Nope, not at all. He could have told the ref that, hey, just done. But nope, we kept going, and I think it enhanced the visual. But that still doesn't change the fact that that match was awful, and it was placed in an awful spot because the show was so damn long.
What happens if he turns right around in 2 weeks in Saudi Arabia and puts the belt on Roman?
I will be livid. I don't care if Roman has the belt. I know a lot of people don't like Roman. I don't have anything against him. But it was WrestleMania. If it was a time for you to put the belt on him and say, I know y'all don't like him. I know y'all think I'm pushing him too much. But you know what? Damn it, we're here. He's getting the belt. You give it to him then. So you're going to give it to him on this show that's at 9 in the morning on a Friday. Yeah, people are going to watch it. But, I mean, I'll probably have it on while I'm at work. But I'm at work. I'm not devoting my time to it. I'm not enjoying it like I should be. If you give him the title then, it's like, well, then why not give it to him in Mania? Because clearly he's going into a feud with Samoa Joe after this.
Yeah, Backlash.
Why not just give it to him in Mania, and this can be a title match for Backlash, and he can do whatever. Brock can get his rematch at this show that nobody's going to see. He can win it by some kind of... Roman can win it some kind of way. And you can go on with your life the way it seems that you're going to go. Why? So...
Doesn't leave room for Bobby Lashley to come back and challenge Brock Lesnar for the WWE Championship.
I mean, if that's what they want to do, that's fine too. Now, it's going to suck that Roman's going to lose two title main events back to back. And at that point, you've been pushing him, but now you're saying, I don't know if this is probably not what you're saying, but the idea to me is, that's it. I can't do anything with this guy anymore. And at that point, I want Samoa Joe to mollywop him, and he go take the title.
I mean, I think Samoa Joe had the best match last year with Lesnar.
He did.
Because you actually felt like Lesnar could actually lose that match.
Yeah, and that's the thing with Brock. Especially like at that point last year, was like, when they put the belt back on him, we're like, your problem now is I don't believe anybody on your roster can beat Brock Lesnar. He is the champion for life now. This is it. But when Joe happened and that match happened, I'm like...
July, yeah.
Yeah, when that match happened, I'm like, that guy can do it. I believe that guy and only that guy, and well, now that guy and Braun Strowman. I believe those guys can beat him. But that's it. I don't think anybody else can beat him. And you have not made me believe anybody else can beat him. Samoa Joe needs to go beat Brock Lesnar.
And it'll be interesting to see where he goes from here. The Saudi Arabia show... And Jeddah is very interesting on a number of levels, not the least of which is the political ties of no women.
Yeah, I saw your tweet, and I didn't realize it until you said it. I'm like, yeah, that is right.
They just got driver's licenses like a year ago.
Yeah.
Like, we're great. Women's Revolution, you know, Women's Battle Royal, Women's Royal Rumble, Women's Elimination Chamber, May Young Tournament. Not in Saudi Arabia.
No. So they better be taking all that Saudi money and then going and put it right into some women's stuff. Say, yeah, that money we made from here, it goes to all the women. That'll make it at least feel better.
Indeed. Well, that'll about do it for this week's episode of the Movies on the Brain podcast. You can follow us on Twitter. I am at BCW Tiger Fan.
And y'all can come at me. I'm at The Mets Theory.
All right. Thank you very much and have a pleasant evening.